When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The infatuation part that Kobe didn't like, but which Helen and I liked, that for me was the interesting thing. Rewatching Twilight, little kind of low budget film as it was at the time, that was what I was fascinated by.
It was a real like linchpin film in so many ways, pushing forward into things like Hunger Games and Maze Runner and all of those that sprang off the back of Twilight. I think it's more than earned its place both as a teen movie and as a vampire film.
The acting between them and this kind of like otherworldly weirdness going on is really great. I really enjoyed it. I think it's too long. Hey everyone, welcome to Flix Watcher. Joining us today, we have James.
Hi, nice to see you again.
Ben.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Yo.
And we're here to review Twilight. Thank you as always to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello film fans, welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have James and Ben. If you would like to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello, I'm James King and I'm a film writer and broadcaster, and I've been on the show before. Very happy to be back. And there seem to be two things actually that I always talk about on this podcast. One is Keanu Reeves and the other are teen movies. And I think I'll be talking about both of those again today. So no change there. But yes, lovely to see you again.
Hi, I'm Ben Travis. I am a film journalist. I work for Empire magazine and especially the website empireonline.com. And I contribute to the Empire podcast as well. So yeah, lovely to be on. Thanks.
Well, thank you for joining us. Well, this is, we're going to go to a teen movie, as you kind of alluded to, James, in this. But you said you talk about Keanu Reeves. You talk about Twilight today, but you've got a book out, which is out at the moment, called Be More Keanu. Why have you not chosen a Keanu Reeves film? Is the obvious question here.
Yeah, well, the last time I was on, I spoke about John Wick 3, Parabellum. So I thought, well, we kind of ticked that box. And I know that you've covered other Keanu Reeves films anyway. I did think about The Lake House. I thought about The Lake House, which is on Netflix. I didn't know if I wanted to put you through that. I mean, I kind of have a weird soft spot for The Lake House, but I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. So I was, I just thought for a change, and for a number of reasons, actually, that I'll get onto later, I thought I'll do a non-Keanu film and choose something that was a bit of a cultural landmark back in the noughties.
Well, I think myself and Helen were chatting on WhatsApp, and I was like, how come we didn't pick a Keanu film? And you said there's no key Keanu films left that we haven't talked about already. But literally like the day after, Parenthood came on there, which isn't known as being a Keanu film, but I think it still has one of his best performances ever in film. And I love, there's that one scene, guys, if you haven't seen Parenthood, go and watch it, because Steve Martin's great in it, and there's lots of cool bits in it, but Keanu's got a really cool scene, which I'm just like, every time I'm like, so cool.
And of course, he's
atypical of Keanu.
He's in there with Leaf Phoenix, as he was known then, now River Phoenix. And of course, Keanu was very good friends with Leaf/River's brother. River Phoenix. Leaf slash Joaquin's brother, River Phoenix. I'm getting my Phoenixes confused. And when it was the Oscars this year, Keanu presented an award with Diane Keaton. And there was a lovely shot that the camera operator got of Joaquin Phoenix in the audience, because obviously he was nominated for Joker. And it was just a moment that I thought, that is purely for Parenthood fans. Just there's a sort of a shot of Joaquin, a.k.a. Leaf, looking lovingly at Keanu on the stage. And I thought, yep, someone's a Parenthood fan and they've put that in just for us.
Well, thank you very much for that, guys. We're not going to have an Academy Awards in the same way this year. We'll see. But we're talking today, James, this is your choice. We're talking about Twilight. Can you tell us why you chose Twilight and what happens in a minute or less?
Twilight is about teenage Bella Swan. She moves from Arizona to rainy Washington State in the northwest of America to be with her dad. So moves from living with her mum to go and live with her dad. And when she's there, she meets the mysterious Edward Cullen with his fabulous hair and his equally mysterious family and their equally fabulous hair, and learns about this ancient secret war between local vampires and werewolves whilst falling head over heels in love with Moody Edward, who is, we find out, a cold one, which always makes me think of a beer in the fridge, but actually a cold one
cracking
is...
open a cold one with the boys.
Exactly, yes. But that means he is one of those vampires. He is an immortal blood sucker. So I guess the premise, and this is what hooked so many people in at the time, is what do you do if you fall in love with a vampire? If you're human and you fall in love with an immortal, how does that work?
And is that why you chose it for us? Because you wanted to discuss what you would do?
I chose it because it just... Twilight seems to be a little bit in the air again at the moment. Obviously, there's a lot of Robert Pattinson around at the moment because of Tenet on the big screen, because of the Batman filming, because of Robert Pattinson getting coronavirus and the Batman stopping filming. And we saw him in The Lighthouse as well earlier this year. So he's had, I can't say it's a good year because he's got ill, but you know, he's had a, professionally, he's certainly been back in the spotlight over the last 12 months. So I think having just seen Tenet, I was, you know, thinking about Robert Pattinson again, not someone who I would say is a brilliant actor in the traditional sense, in the sort of, you know, Meryl Streep, Daniel Day-Lewis sense, but actually who I think just has this lovely sort of loose, disheveled, casual way about him that I always really enjoy watching. And then also last week I saw some news about a film called Happier Season, which is Kristen Stewart's new film. She plays Bella in the movie, obviously, which is, I think it's described as a lesbian Christmas rom-com, which I can't think of any others. It's probably a first. That's coming out over Christmas. So that looks good. You know, it's got real good buzz about it. Aubrey Plaza's in it and Dan Levy. So lots of people I like. Claire Duvall directed it. If you know your 90s teen films.
Oh, Dan Levy from Schitt's Creek.
Claire Duvall from The Faculty back in the day. So, you know, that looks really interesting. So that was another thing that I saw last week that got me thinking again about Twilight. And then there's lots of adverts for the Twilight season on MTV. I think they're showing them all again on MTV. And I keep seeing these ads for it. So it just seemed to me that Twilight was sort of reaching out and saying, yes, rediscover me, revisit me. It's time to go back to the original story that came out in 2008. So, oh, and of course, there's a new Stephanie Meyer book out who wrote Twilight books. And I think this one, she's done what E.L. James did with 50 Shades of Grey. And she's just retold the story, but from Edward's point of view this time, like E.L. James did with Christian Grey's point of view, which I haven't read it, so I can't comment. But, you know, so Twilight is definitely around again. And it does feel like it's perhaps ripe for a revival of sorts.
And also it's prominently there on your bookshelf. And people who are listening can't see it, but you must see it every single time you walk into that room.
Well, no, I put it out there because I actually got the quote. This is another reason. Shit. Is that this is my quote here. And Twilight really ties in with my time at Radio 1.
So just read out the movie quote.
This took me bloody hours to come up with. This is poetry. The must-see movie of the year.
Whoa.
I mean, come
on. Where did you draw that one from?
I mean, it's unbelievable, right? But, Yeah, because the Twilight saga ties in with my time at Radio 1, and obviously, they were absolutely all over it, because it's a teen series, perfect for our listenership. So, I did a lot of junkets for the film and press conferences and, travelled a bit with it and met the actors and the filmmakers and things. So it really was, I was quite involved with it when it came out, to the point where, and I remember, Twilight fans are passionate, and I'm sure a lot of them, even though there hasn't been a new movie for a while, I continue to be passionate. But I did a thing once, and I got on the radio, and I said that the actor who plays Bella's dad in the movie, who is called Billy Burke, mm-hmm. I called him Billy Black, who's actually a character from the story, and I got it mixed up. And the fans were so passionate that they created a Facebook page about how much they hate me because I got that fact wrong. And I love passionate fans. It's brilliant to be passionate about these things. But it was just a real insight into, at that point in time, the late noughties. So this was around the time of the second film, actually, of New Moon. It shows you just how passionate people were about everything to do with Twilight, and how much the fans really lived those stories and lived and breathed them and were very protective of them. I've never seen anything like it, especially because it was more female based. I think, you see a lot of guys into certain genres and get very passionate about it. But this was a real, I know it sounds like a generalization, but, it felt like it was much more of a female slanted fan base. And my God, they were just, were so into it.
Do you think you would have been cancelled in today's parlance for such a...
it was such a horrendous era. The thing is that I think frustrated me at the time is that I always champion those films. It's kind of like, well, if you're going to have a go at someone about Twilight, at least have a go at someone who hates them and who has slated them. But I'm on the DVD cover. I mean, I love these movies. So what are you doing? It's just, I'm fascinated by fan bases, and you see it, with so many different genres of films. But I'd never experienced anything. The only one I'd experienced it a little bit with Serenity and Firefly, the Joss Whedon TV show. Yeah. I'd seen it a little bit with that. But Twilight just seemed to be on a whole other level, the fanaticism.
Ben, you strike me as someone who's more of the Twilight age group than myself and James and Helen, potentially. Is that correct? And also, going back to the DVD and poster covers, as a film journalist, what ones have you had, and what is it like when you find out you get something as prominent as that?
It's exciting. I have one on the Spider-Man Far From Home Blu-ray, which I was pretty chuffed with. It doesn't have my name on it, but it's got my quote from my Empire review on there. And my name is on the back of the Onward Blu-ray for Pixar's, the Pixar film. So I was pretty chuffed with that. It's always nice when you get that that little poster quote. In terms of Twilight, I fell very, very slightly outside of the age bracket. So this came out when I was in sixth form, and I am like super firm Harry Potter generation. Like that was everything for me. And there was a bit of an overlap, but I think because of the slight shift in the target audience, especially as James said, hugely female target audience and slightly younger than I was, it fell outside of, I think I was just too cool for it as a teenager. And I did see the first film. I haven't seen any of the rest, but I have to say, even when I saw it the first time, I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it again now. I think it's nice that it's getting a bit of a critical reappraisal, especially with obviously RPATS and K-Stew both having a lot more sort of cultural cachet now than they ever have done. That I think it shows even more at a rewatch, this first film in particular, that the reception it got in some quarters was probably pretty unfair and maybe, I don't know, slightly misogynistic. That people have a way of sneering at things aimed at teenage girls that are actually really well made and that speak to people in a certain way. And Twilight was definitely one of those things. And I think people gave it a lot of kicking for what it wasn't as a vampire film. And I think it's more than earned its place both as a teen movie and as a vampire film. So I'm excited to dig in.
Have you seen this before, Helen?
I have seen this before, not when it came out. I think I probably saw it a couple of years after I was reasonably interested in it. Way past the age of its target audience when it came out, though. But I'm a huge Robert Pattinson fan. When this came out, I probably wasn't, but then he made two films with David Cronenberg and suddenly I became quite interested and like quite a lot of his films a lot. And he is someone who I sort of go out of my way to try and seek films that he does, because I think he's really fascinating in his choices and puts in a completely different performance each time. And equally, Kirsten Stewart, I find really interesting. I watched Personal Shopper recently, and that's really interesting. And she's so good in it. And what I really enjoyed watching it this time round is when they're first getting to know each other, they're just fascinating to watch because they're almost like these two animals, like sniffing each other out, and they can't quite work each other out. And the acting between them and this kind of like otherworldly weirdness going on is really great. I really enjoyed it. And when it sort of got the film choice that you'd pick this, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna watch this again. And I kind of like it. I think it's too long. I think it's too long. And I think when the plot starts to get a little bit with the, you know, with the outside vampires coming in, I lose it less because I'm more into the relationship between Edward and Bella than I am kind of like, you know, the auxiliary vampires that come in and cause trouble. But yeah, it's a really interesting film. And, you know, it's, we kind of take it for granted that, you know, people like Anna Kendrick and have been around, but this was kind of their breakout film. So yeah. And also I was thinking, you know, speaking of Keanu Reeves, when I was a teen, I really loved Bram Stoker's Dracula. And, you know, there's something about being a teenage girl and sexy vampires and things like that, and a bit of, you know, that kind of thing. That's kind of fun when you're a teenage girl.
Did that tie in into any way what you're thinking, James? Bram Stoker's Dracula isn't on Netflix, is it?
It was, but yeah. I think it might have gone.
Yeah.
Well, it was mainly a chance for me to revisit something that, you know, I was deep into several years ago, but haven't really thought about because it burned brightly, but I think it burned quickly, Twilight, and it really just disappeared. And probably because R. Pattinson and K. Stew distanced themselves from it in their follow-up choices, it did seem to just disappear for a while. But then all those things that I mentioned earlier have sort of brought it back into all of our minds. So I wanted to revisit it because of that. And the thing that really struck me watching it, and I think this goes back to what Ben was saying, is that it is not a film for traditional critics. But what it does brilliantly, and in a weird way, and I want you to stick with me on this, it reminded me of Dirty Dancing in this respect, is that it captures feelings brilliantly. It's a movie about this girl's feelings. It's not about logic. And you can pick apart the story. You can certainly pick apart the story of Dirty Dancing. But both of them are about a teenage girl falling in love for the first time and how that feels. And both of them are also about how that teenage girl sees other boys her age and thinks, well, they're dicks. Why would I want to go out with them? I want to go out with the suave, sophisticated Debussy listening vampire, or I want to go out with the more mature, sexy dance teacher, you know. So I think it's brilliant. Both of those films are brilliant at capturing a 17-year-old girl's feelings and emotions. And that's not traditionally something that middle-aged male film critics are that interested in. But of course, both of those films as well have this passionate fan base, because there are a lot of people out there who don't care what middle-aged male film critics think, which is a very good thing. And they just went, you know what? This movie spoke to me because I was like that. And maybe I didn't fall in love with a dance teacher or a vampire, but I was that 17-year-old girl feeling those things. And Twilight, certainly the first half of the movie, like Helen said, you know, it really gets that. There is such beautiful awkwardness in this feeling. And I think Kristen Stewart is is, you know, really shines in this. She is, and in all of her films, but she is just brilliant at being awkward and just uncertain, and kind of, you can just see the knots in her stomach, and she's just like, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to say, I don't know how to feel. And she's so good at that.
I kind of liken it's like constipation acting, though. I I didn't really buy, I don't know, sometimes I have a tin eye or a tin ear for kind of infatuation and romance, and it just didn't hit the mark for me for this. And it's, I've only seen I saw the second one first, and then went back to watch this one because my friend said, no, the first one's better. And I do think the first one's better. And I read the book, and then I can't really remember what happens in the book specifically, but I was like, this is quite good, actually. And then didn't proceed to watch anything else. But all of the saga, which I think is a bad word for it, saga sounds super boring, is on Netflix, and I'm going to watch all the way through now because I think there is something there. But for the infatuation stuff, when you talk about Dirty Dancing, I was like, yes, that's for me, that was like, that captured that infatuation a lot more roundedly than in Twilight, in this first one for me. So that's kind of like grounded me a bit. Kirsten Stewart and Robert Pattinson and Anna Kendrick are all amazing people, and I love the fact that they're doing a lot more stuff outside of this. And it goes to show that you don't have to be in. You can forge a career outside of, you know, a bubble like Harry Potter kind of forces you into, because Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint guy, I can't remember what his name is. I don't think they've done that much, but
see Daniel Radcliffe is doing a similar thing to our Pattinson case to you, in that he is like making these weird random choices, thinking, I don't need blockbusters anymore. Have you seen the Daniel
Army
Radcliffe?
Man,
yes, the farting corpse film, which is amazing.
I haven't seen it yet, but I know he's doing things different. But I think Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart are doing a best job of it generally. And like Helen said, I think those guys, any film that they're doing makes it like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm interested. And he was great in Tenet. It was great in the Safdie Brothers film.
Good Time.
Yeah.
And I saw him in High Life recently, and obviously The Lighthouse and Maps of the Stars as well. And also, I really like him in Remember Me. I thought he was really good in that as well.
Wow, that's going back a bit. Wow. No one remembers Remember Me. I can't believe you brought that one
great.
Up.
It's great. It's such a good film.
With Pierce Brosnan as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I always recommend it when people are like, oh, I want something to watch on Netflix. I always remember that recommend that because it's such an unknown film and it's really good.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly brings a unique quality, I think, to movies, and an eccentricity. And yeah, I suppose perhaps there's a comparison to someone like Johnny Depp when he, you know, Johnny Depp kind of did it the other way around, and that he did the indie movies first and then the blockbusters, whereas R. Patz was the blockbusters and then the indie movies. But it's that kind of thing of, I'm not just a pretty face, I'm more than being incredibly good looking. And perhaps even in my films, I will do as much, this is outside of the Twilight saga, I will do as much as I humanly can to make myself not good looking, just to remind people that actually I'm an actor, not just a pinup. And I think he's done that really well, and he's a fascinating presence. I can't wait to see what he does with Batman.
It's almost like the McConaughey, isn't it? Where he was, Matthew McConaughey was kind of pigeonholed as like, get your kit off and stand next to a pretty woman. And he just kind of went, no, I'm not going to do that. Oh, okay, budget my XXL, I'll do that. But, you know, other ones I will keep my clothes on and be a good actor, which is great. And it's great to see that he has got depth to him. I never saw the pretty boy aspect, but maybe that's not for me. But people do, like, love him greatly. And I do think he's a fantastic screen presence in this. And I will continue to watch his films.
I will say, to sort of bring it back to a review of this film, and this is this is but this is it, what was what I found interesting, and actually this is going to sound like I'm copying Helen, but this is completely what I agreed with. The infatuation part that Kobe didn't like, but which Helen and I liked, that for me was the interesting thing. Rewatching Twilight, that was what I was fascinated by. When it became more of a film about vampires and the backstory of the Cullen family, and I guess also knowing what happens in the sequels and how they become very much more embroiled in the history of the vampires and many other characters come into it, I did lose interest. I lost interest in the second half of Twilight, but also I lost interest in the series as it went on, because it just seemed to lose to me what was really fascinating about it in the first place, which was lovesick teenage girl falls for vampire. The single movie, little kind of low budget film as it was at the time, that's the interesting thing. When it becomes the saga and becomes, you know, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Breaking Dawn Part 2, and huge battles and, you know, all this kind of stuff, then I'm losing interest.
Definitely peak for me when he shows her what he looks like in the sunlight. It's kind of like...
Quite bad special effects as well, weren't they? You know, it's not, I mean, the movie's 12 years old, but I know that, Catherine Hardwicke, who directed this and who directed 13 before this, which is a brilliant coming of age film, and Nikki Reed, who's in Twilight, was also in 13. I think she was brought on because of the teenage element, because of the teenage love story element. Whereas when New Moon came out, which was directed by, I want to say Paul White, but it might have been Chris White, so I can't remember, one of the brothers, he was brought on for the special effects because he'd just done The Golden Compass, which was a very special effects heavy movie. And I think what they wanted to do with the second film was play more to the special effects and more to the action, which was more his forte. In the first film with Catherine Hardwicke, it's the drama and the emotion that's more her forte. And that's why I preferred the first movie. And I think with the following movies, when the special effects and the action scenes became more of a thing, I was less interested.
And I do completely... Sorry, I'll get to yourself in a second, Ben. One of the films that lots and lots of people lauded and loved to bits was Call Me By Your Name. And I loved absolutely everything about it, but I didn't buy the relationship.
That is everything about it, isn't it?
No, we got this. You got the Italy, kind of scenescape, and you got his dad. And I loved the kind of like how they got together and stuff. But I didn't. I was like, really? I'm not sure. Really? So for me, I can understand that, you know, people loving that aspect of it. And I do have a kind of tin ear for relationships and maybe young love. I don't know what it is.
Are you sort of opening up to us about something here, Kobe?
Possibly. Ben, sorry, what were you going to say?
I just think it's such an interesting mix of genres, and it sort of plays out those genres separately in really interesting ways. So obviously as a romance film, but it's really interesting as a teen movie, the way it fits into the sort of teen movie pantheon. It is such a teen movie, as James was saying, that the like apocalyptic level of emotion in it, that everything, that like your first love is sex and death and he's undead and you love him and he wants to kill you, and it's such like an angsty teen movie. And I think it's so interesting in how it steered the teen movie for such a long time, because this was only 5 years after Mean Girls, which is, I think, you would think of as the quintessential like American high school colorful, snappy, funny teen movie, whereas Twilight comes along and you're away from the sort of, I don't know, bright colorful Californian high schools. You're in the sort of is it in Oregon? It's somewhere like foresty and kind of rainy, and it's all the feelings and all the emotions and the vampires and not fitting in at school, but in a very different way to a lot of kind of previous teen movies. I think it did something really interesting with that genre. And then obviously the crossover between it being a proper teen movie about high school and relationships, and also being a YA adaptation, and what that then did in terms of pushing forward into things like Hunger Games and Maze Runner and all of those that sprang off the back of Twilight. It was a real like linchpin film in so many ways, and as a vampire film as well, I think it's interesting because 2008 was the year of vampire reinvention. Spoke about the sparkly arpats, which again, it's not everyone's favorite twist on the vampire lore, but in the same year you had Let the Right One In, and you also had True Blood was 2008 as well. So there were all these sort of different takes on the vampire mythology. And I think there was a bit of a prevailing wisdom at the time that was, Twilight is doing vampires wrong. They shouldn't be sparkly. This is what they should do. And I think now, with a bit of distance, with a bit of remove, you can look back on it and think it was just a take on vampires, of what a vampire would be to a teenage girl. And I think it works really well for that. And I think it's no less valid as a screen incarnation of what vampires can be, just because it, it was twinkly and a bit more cuddly compared to a lot of other previous screen vampires.
I like the analogy talking about True Blood. I only saw season one of True Blood. Yeah, that's a fair point. And before we get to the scores, I just want to touch on those kind of YA books that came out. Was this the first one? Or was it Harry Potter that split the final chapter in final book into two chapters, when it was just like, because I think that's where Hunger Games really fell apart for me, is that the worst book was divided into two and it was like the worst thing ever.
Nothing puts me off more than having to like go through two parts. I forgave Marvel for it with the Avengers, but nothing like...
What do you mean forgave?
Nothing puts me off. Like, I was sort of into the idea of Dune, but now I know there's going to be two halves to it. I'm a bit like, oh, do I really want to do that? Does it need to be that long? I'd rather get it over with in one.
I mean, Harry Potter did it first in terms of literally splitting it into part one and part two, and... Mm. I'm biased, but I think that last Harry Potter film needed that. I quite like that it basically just does most of the plot stuff and then leaves that part two is just a big battle. That's what I wanted. Whereas, yeah, it was then, I think then Twilight did it second and then Hunger Games did it after that. And both of those final two Hunger Games films, neither of them did as well box office wise as the previous two films. So that was a point of really like, this doesn't work anymore, even from a trying to get a bit of extra cash at the box office. It's not working. It's turning audiences off. So I don't know. I haven't seen the rest of the Twilight film, so I don't know how this sort of fares as a split the final book into two films. I don't know. James, so you can probably speak to that.
Maybe it does rely on the source content, though, because I know Dune is a huge book, so I can kind of see where that splits into two. At no point am I going to read that book. I can't be bothered. But with the Hunger Games final book, it was just... The first two I read within like hours of like starting it, but the last book, it took me like a few weeks, and it's not a thick, heavy book. I was just bored. I kind of trudged through it, and that's probably why, more than anything, that didn't work. But I know, James, you've seen the final two. You've seen the whole series of Twilight.
Yeah, I mean, the last one, the Breaking Dawn movies are I think, completely insane.
I've read the plot synopsis because I've read all of the synopsis of the further ones, and as you keep going down, obviously we can't really do any spoilers, but this is nuts. She's like 18 or something by the time the last book or something, is that where she gets, and at that point in her life so much is happening that you should read the plot synopsis because it is nuts.
Yeah, there's a very strange sex scene between Bella and Edward, there's a sort of a battle scene with a twist, which is just one twist too far. I mean, you know, if you can't handle a story, if you can't buy into a story that a teenage girl would fall in love with a vampire, then I tell you, the twist in the battle scene of Breaking Dawn Part 2 is going to be way beyond you. I did lose interest in them a little bit, but I don't think that's particularly... I think that's more of a thing about me than Twilight, because I also felt the same with so many other franchises. You know, it's just like... The deeper it goes into the mythology of all of these stories, and I'd even include that with Harry Potter. Sorry, Ben. You know, it's the less interested I become. I think I prefer the sort of simplicity of the first Twilight movie, especially. I think we can have a romantic view, and it will always be sold as a romantic view by the film company, that it's to do the story justice. I don't buy that. It's to make extra money. Because film companies, you know, and this is just fact, there's nothing wrong with it, but they rely on these kind of franchises to make a lot of money. Mm. And we get little indie movies from them as well, because the franchises have made money. So, you know, they help everyone out, but they don't want to lose their biggest cash cows. Harry Potter made billions for Warner Brothers, and Entertainment One did very well out of the Twilight films. They don't want to lose them, so they will string them out for as long as possible, which is why we've now got the Fantastic Beasts spin-off from Warner Brothers as well. They want to keep it going. So it was no surprise. I mean, you know, it was a surprise when they said they were going to do it, but at the same time, when you think about it, it's not really a surprise that they would try and do that and split a book, because it just gives you two films instead of one, and that's two lots of $500 million instead of one. So it makes financial sense.
Because this must be one of the most profitable film series ever, because Harry Potter cost a truck ton to make. But this, in comparison, would have been so, at least, especially this film, would have been so meagre in comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the first one, you know, it was a gamble. No one knew it was going to be big. The books had been successful, but it wasn't, you know, in comparison, you look at The Hunger Games or something, I suppose that, you know, that was coming a few years into the YA phenomenon, whereas Twilight didn't have that evidence behind it that it was going to work. I suppose the movies became more expensive as they went along. But there was a problem with the Twilight movies in that they did make a lot of money, but there was always a cap, there was always a ceiling as to how much they could make, because they were fan films. And with Harry Potter, it's more of a family experience, certainly in Britain as well. It's like a kind of just a feel good homegrown, let's all go to the cinema together thing. I suppose, you know, James Bond might be a bit like that as well. We're just a bit more, it's a bit more cozy and comforting. Whereas with Twilight, it was such a passionate fan thing. It was, the problem with Twilight was, are you going to get people outside of that fan base going to see those films? And that was always the issue with it. The fan base was big, but I don't think they could ever get to people who were just slightly more casual cinema goers.
I think evidently with myself, Ben and Helen, we've watched the first one and maybe the second one, but not continued.
You were the problem, yeah.
I certainly didn't go to the cinema to watch it, and watched it quite late. But I mean, I guess also with Twilight, they had to move pretty quick on making them, because obviously as the fan base gets older, they may no longer have the same passion they had for it when they were 60s.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like they were one a year. I might be wrong in that, but it definitely was. Yeah, it was certainly quite a small amount of time. I think it was maybe 2008 to 2011, 2012, something like that. You know, so it was like I said, they burnt very brightly. But as soon as they were over, unlike Harry Potter or even Star Wars, which seemed to have a kind of the passion seemed to carry on, even though the films had stopped being made. I never really felt that with Twilight. Maybe that's just, you know, my own personal experience, but it felt like people kind of went, okay, done now, we'll move on. Which is why it's interesting to me that it feels all these years later that there is a bit of a renaissance.
Anything else, guys, before we head to the scores? Let's do it.
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called
Song by Song,
where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to the Painted Flixwatcher scoring system. All of the scores are out of 5, and you may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, James, please, with your recommendability.
Recommendability. It's weird recommending Twilight because it just feels that everybody's seen it. It's like a sort of a thing that, you know, actually my niece, who is now 18 herself, so missed Twilight the first time around, is discovering them. So I suppose there is a new audience discovering the films. And I would recommend, certainly I'd recommend this particular Twilight movie to teenagers. And so I'd go with a 4, because I think there's a lot that, you know, we teenagers back in the day enjoyed, and I think that teenagers of this era can still enjoy that kind of passion and obsession that we see with Bella doesn't go out of fashion. That's something that's universal, and, you know, will last for a long time. So they might chuckle at the special effects or the lack of, you know, iPhones, but I think that there is something at the heart of it that you know, can last for infinitely, really.
Ben?
I'm also going to go 4, because I think James is just saying that everyone's already seen it, and I think actually a lot of people haven't seen it, but a lot of people have preconceived notions about what Twilight was that maybe aren't necessarily representative, especially of this first film. So I would recommend it to people. I think it's time to go back and give it a rewatch and admit that a lot of people were a bit snooty about it at the time, but it holds up nicely. And also, I genuinely think there is something about watching this film in 2020. We've had a shocking year, and this is a film from a much simpler time, and there was like a warmth and a coziness to it that it was like this level of, on the one hand, like I said, apocalyptic levels of emotion, but at the same time, it's quite a safe, like, unchallenging film that will embrace you warmly in this coldest of years. I think it's a good film to revisit now that is not going to demand anything of you, and you will probably enjoy more than you think you would.
Helen?
There's a lot I really like about it, but the bit where I think it kind of lost it for me was the baseball game with Muse, which...
Oh, I love the baseball game. Don't ever go at the baseball game. That's amazing, that bit.
And I was just,
you have to lean into the cheesiness.
Yeah. I think that then, for me, a lot of what I really loved, I was a bit like, oh yeah, I forgot about this. And then that's when the movie takes... That's when the other vampires come in. So I think the key for me is that I don't like any other vampires in it, apart from like the main ones, which is kind of hard to take on a thing like this when there's so many other vampires and that revolves around the plot and the werewolves. Like, I'm not really into werewolves. It's all about vampires. But I've said before, when they're getting to know each other, it's fascinating to watch them. And they're so awkward. And it's, for me, it's so accurate that they're so awkward. And there's some really funny bits as well where he's just like, told her that he can read everyone else's mind, but he can't read hers. And she's like, oh, does that mean you don't like me? There's so many funny bits that it's so teenage girl. Like, he tells her that, you know, he's 100-something-year-old vampire. And she's just like, oh, well, what, you know, but do I look okay in my outfit kind of thing? And it's so teenage girl. And I think those two are brilliant. And it's also directed by a woman. And there's a really great bit in it where she's just like, oh, well, if you want to go to the prom with the guy, then why don't you just ask him? And she goes, I asked him and he said yes, and I feel empowered. And it's like, great, more teen films should be like this. So there's lots of bits in that. And also, you know, I do feel that this is definitely a film more for women, well, teenage girls. And I don't think teenage girls really get that many films that are interesting and a bit different and appeal to girls who are into horror, who do find like vampires sexy. There isn't really much of that. So there's a lot going for it. And I think it is definitely worth a revisit. And I did really enjoy watching it. So I'm going to go in the 4 club as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 4. I think it's fine. I think don't write it off. I did write it off. Hence watching the second film first, because I was like, this sounds terrible. But it's not. It's better than the first. It's better than the second film. And I'm quite looking forward to watching the rest of the series, even if it's just to like close that chapter of like, you know, when you haven't seen something and there's all that kind of pressure to like see it out. So even if it just means I've seen them and I don't have to revisit them again, that's a valid reason to do so. But this is good. And please ignore me, because I do have a tin ear for romance, and infatuation and relationships like that. But
you've just never been a teenage girl. I think maybe that's it.
No, but I'm saying when it hits the mark, like it did, like in Dirty Dancing, I could 100% get behind that. But for this, I just didn't get behind that. And some, maybe, I don't know why that is, but still 4. James, repeat viewing score.
Well, I mean, I've seen it several times, and obviously the fans have, I'm sure, have seen this film hundreds of times. It was just constantly on, I'm sure. So it does bear up to repeat viewing, because that at the heart of it, there is something very classic that doesn't really go out of style. And I don't, you know, I joked a little bit about the special effects and the technology, I suppose, would look a bit out of date now. But it's not about that. Or certainly the majority of the film isn't about that. And when it does become a bit more about the effects and the action, that's when I lose interest. But, you know, for the majority of the film, it's not about that. So I think you can easily rewatch it now and it feels absolutely fine. Nothing feels too clunky. I'm not sure a sexy vampire would drive a Volvo, but there we go.
But he knew how to drive it.
Oh, it's yeah,
safe,
sure.
I safe, mean, sure. Practical car, though. Like, Dad would be approved of that.
And I do think that watching it now in the era of someone like Billie Eilish, you can really see the origins. You know, this was emo era when this came out. This was kind of the, you know, the emo teen movie. And, you know, it's interesting that Ben mentioned about Mean Girls and how much things had moved on. And I think that this really was, you know, that it was perhaps a little watered down, but it really was the emo teen movie with, you know, Radiohead over the end credits. And that kind of teenage girl in pop culture is still going, and you know, Billie Eilish is kind of the queen of that at the moment, but I think you can see the origins of it in Kristen Stewart. I'm waffling, so what I'm saying is the rewatchability, I'd go with 4, because I think there's stuff in there that you know doesn't go out of style, doesn't go out of fashion, and will be endlessly fascinating.
Ben.
I'm going to go 3. I'm really glad I revisited it, and I think it's worth a revisit. I am not going to rush out and watch it again, like Kobe said. I think I'm going to probably try and watch the sequels now. They're all on Netflix. It's super easy. But I can see myself coming back to Twilight at some point later in life. It's probably not in the next couple of years, but I'm going to go a solid 3 because I'd stick it on again at some point.
Helen?
It's over 2 hours, so repeat watching... I'd repeat watch like the first part of it more, I think, than the whole film. I did enjoy rewatching it, but it did remind me that once they've kind of got together, it loses a bit of its fizz, and you can see then that they're then setting it up for the sequels, which is less interesting to me. Am I going to watch the other ones? I'm not quite sure. Maybe, but I don't know when I'm going to find the time. 2 for me on repeat viewing.
Yeah, I'm going for a 1. 4, 3, 2, 1. Wow. So I'm glad to rewatch it, and it's spurred my interest to watch the rest of them. I can't see myself watching it that often, and it's one that's kind of tests. So if I had the time and I was visiting a friend's house and they said, "Hey guys, do you want to watch Twilight?" I'm probably like, "Not really. Is there anything else?"
You mean you're not going to go? If I invited you around and said, "Should we crack open some beers, kick back, order a pizza, and watch Twilight?" You would say no. I'm so disappointed.
I'd be like, "Ben, we've got Netflix. There'll be other things to watch."
Twilight, what, New Dawn is the second one?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, was it Eclipse?
New Moon is the second one.
New Moon, that's it.
Yeah.
Small screen score, James.
Oh, I think it works absolutely fine on the small screen. I've seen them on the big screen, but, you know, I don't think, certainly this one, which is more intimate compared to the other ones, I don't think it loses anything. So I'll go for another 4.
Ben?
Yeah, I'm going to go 4 as well. I thought it had a really nice cinematic quality to it, but there was a real warmth and a coziness to it that I quite appreciated in my living room. So yeah, I go for a 4.
Helen?
I don't know what would add to my enjoyment having seen it on a cinema other than our pats being sparkly a bit bigger than my TV screen.
What about Muse during the baseball scene?
That song's loud.
Supermassive Black Hole.
That song's loud.
Well, it needs to be. It's great loud, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I don't know what cinematic, but I certainly wouldn't go and do like a Prince Charles marathon with this. I'll give it a 5. I think it kind of works, and I think the special effects are probably suited probably to a TV size screen. I think for me, I enjoyed watching it at home the same time I did the first time around. So 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5 as well, because I wouldn't have seen True Blood in the cinema, and I think True Blood does better with the effects sometimes than Twilight does. So for me, that's very televisual, and I think this is televisual as well. Engagement score, James.
4.5.
4.5?
4.5, yes.
Wow.
I think that, you know, I lost interest towards the end of the film. And it's difficult knowing the other films and also how I lost interest in them. It's difficult to kind of forget that when I'm rewatching this, because it's kind of like, well, this can be as good as it wants to be, but I know that I didn't like the other so much. So that does tarnish it a little bit. But no, I was incredibly engaged, and I think it's incredibly engaging performances. And I don't think we should forget that you know, it was a phenomenon for a reason. It's not a phenomenon just because people were told that it was going to be a phenomenon. It was a phenomenon because people latched onto it. They were literally engaged with it. And that, you know, it felt that it spoke to them. And there have been other attempts at YA franchises that haven't done that. Not everyone worked. This worked for a reason. And I don't think we can do down the impact of Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart in why it worked and how good they were. It feels a little depressing for me to watch it now. And you look at all these names. Certainly, like I said, I was quite involved in the junkets and things, and people like Cam Gigandé and Nikki Reed and Taylor Lautner and Kellan Lutz and all these people who are the supporting cast. And they were like the next big thing. I remember thinking, wow, they've got a huge career ahead of them. Jackson Rathbone, he's going to be the next big thing. You know, they were all like stars in the making. And now you look back at them and go, God, I forgot about them. It really was only, well, Anna Kendrick as well, I suppose, you know, R. Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, who found real fame afterwards. But, you know, they are so good. I'm not going to do them down for that. I think they're brilliant at it, and I think they continue to be brilliant.
Ben?
I'm going to go 4 for my engagement score. I was just really engaged most of the way through. I think, like we said, it sort of tails off a little bit when the other vampires come into play. But when it's the two of them, these two like really charismatic actors playing off against each other, and I really love teen movies anyway. So that world is always something that really captures me. So 4 stars for engagement.
And Helen?
I'm going to go a little bit lower, 3.5 for me. I love kind of the first half, the second half less so, and I did use that time for a little bit of reading up on the plot and finding out what happened in the...
What have I just seen? Is that what you... I mean, reading up on the plot for the future films.
I was just like, why... I couldn't remember why these three vampires were in it that I couldn't remember. I could remember, like, the werewolves and the family, and I'm like, oh, why these three... And then I read it, and it basically drives the kind of the plot for the next million films. The first hour is like completely my attention, and the rest after that, when they start trying explaining the werewolves, how the werewolves come into it, I'm a bit less engaged.
Did you find yourself, like Bella, just at one point just Googling vampires? Look it up on Google. Who knows? It might be on there.
I was thinking then, was Google less well-developed? Because she had to go to a bookstore to find out about them exactly, didn't she?
And it's a very special book, though, that she got.
It was. I mean, sometimes they haven't been scanned in yet, have they? I'm going to go for a bit lower, a 3. I was like, it's good. It's fine. I'll see how the rest of the season. I'll see how the rest of the series for completeness sake. But engagement was a bit low as it went through on. So that gives us an overall score of 3.68750. It's a bit lower than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a bit more of a loving. But guys, thank you very much. James, you've got a book out. Can you tell us a bit more about that before we say sayonara to the fans?
Yes. Be More Keanu, which ties in nicely with the release of Bill and Ted Face the Music. 29 years yes. since Bogus Journey. Wow. We've all been waiting a long time for this third movie. Can we call it a saga? Is it like Twilight? Is it a saga?
Saga's a holiday for like people over 70, isn't it? So can we not use saga when we talk about films?
Yeah, I don't think Bill and Ted's a saga. I call the book Cinema Therapy because it's sort of, if you want a book about Keanu Reeves and you want a book about his movies, absolutely, it's biographical in that respect. But there is definitely a therapeutic element to it. There is definitely a self-help element to it. There are things that I think we can all do and think about in the way that Keanu Reeves has in his life and in his movies. You know, he's someone who just sort of radiates authenticity in his choices, in his life choices, in his movie choices. And I think that's something we can all learn from. So it is hopefully funny, but also, you know, and I've got this from people who've read it as well. They went, yeah, it's funny, but it's actually kind of surprisingly calming and insightful and thoughtful and it's Cinema Therapy. So watch it if you're a film fan, but watch it if you want something, read it if you want something therapeutic as well.
Yeah, and where can people buy that?
Oh, I mean, it's all everywhere. Yeah, I mean, it's Amazon and Waterstones and all the usual places. So.
Yeah, I've got it on my Kindle, which is a bit of a shame because I love it when there's a book. Your book looks great.
And yeah, the illustrations are really good. Yeah, a friend of mine did the illustrations and the design of it as well. Anna did the design and Kate did the illustrations. And, you know, they both really went for it, which I'm really pleased to see. There's some lovely sketches in there that really help the text come to life.
And who did because the GIFs are around as well. The GIFs are even on Instagram, the Be More Keanu. We'll try and make one for this.
They're based on the illustrations in the book. And, you know, it was just from writing a lot about Keanu on Instagram and discovering that there aren't that many exciting GIFs of him. There's loads of GIFs for his film Destination Wedding that he did, which is on Netflix, that he did with Winona Ryder. That's not a great film. And I'm like, well, why are there loads of Destination Wedding GIFs? Let's get some Matrix GIFs out there and Bill and Ted and, you know, him playing bass guitar. So, yeah, we got those mocked up and stuck them on Instagram. So I think he's, you know, that because he's looked like so many different characters, you know, he's had the long hair and the beard, he's had the buzz cut, he's had the Bill and Ted look, he's had the Matrix look. There are so many different styles with him that it really worked visually for all those illustrations.
Ben, who are you?
I am me. I am at Ben S. Travis on Twitter. You can read my writing on empireonline.com and you can hear me doing other pod things on the Empire podcast.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Thanks, Jane, for bringing Twilight to the table. And got to say goodbye now.
Thanks
everyone. Lovely to see you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you. You just heard a Stripped Media production.